Hey there, nice person. Would you mind contributing to our Patreon? It'd be pretty swell if you did. Please? Yeah, I'm just a little kid. But, you know, the Patreon's important. If it doesn't get enough money, I'll probably die. I mean, you know, I'm not sure why my life is connected to the amount of money that a certain Patreon gets, but it is. It's weird. But that's how it is. And I know you're a good person, and you're going to help me out. So if you could go to patreon.com/shadow, that'd be great. That's S-H-A-D-E-A-U-X. Patreon.com. Please? For me? For the life of me, a normal American boy.
This is space. This is the final frontier. These are the cases before the court. Its mission: legislate strange new crimes, seek out new perpetrators and new defendants, to jurisprudently go where no law has gone before. This is the People versus Star Trek Voyager.
The People vs. Star Trek Voyager is recorded in front of no one.
For the defense,
Captain Matthias Zapp Spurlock, on leave from the USS Restorative Justice.
Prosecution,
John Q. Continuum Esquire.
Judge,
the Honorable Midnightian Later.
May it please the court, case on the docket is Case 509. 30 days. Stardate 52179.4. Original air date 12/9/98.
Order in the court. As is well known to all here, these proceedings are being broadcast to a strange man wearing a blue raincoat and a white silk scarf. So I expect a civil tone and a consummate air of professionalism. No rancor, no ribaldry, and not even a sniff of the lemongrass. The question before the court is this. Is Star Trek Voyager a misunderstood gem or just plain, tawdry garbage? Now your opening arguments. Keep them brief.
Your Honor, I will indeed be brief. This is by far the worst episode of C-Lab 2021 I have ever seen. It wasn't even that funny. I mean, come on! Thank you.
Captain Spurlock. In the tradition of films like The Shawshank Redemption, The Green Mile, Ernest Goes to Jail, and Caged Heat 2, Stripped of Freedom, 30 Days explores the way in which forced confinement tears away the humanity of not just the punished, but the figures in authority who levied the punishment. Unlike those other films on that list, however, 30 Days pushes the genre in an unexpected direction by not actually exploring any of that, or really anything else. What better way to highlight the banal cruelty of the modern criminal justice system than to have all the show's regulars throw another regular into the hole for 30 days and then act like, whatever, this is cool, he deserves it. Bravo and brava, Voyager writers. Your willingness to make your beloved characters look like complete assholes in the service of art continues to impress, especially when the result is not art.
Now the evidence will be presented in the format agreed upon by the Fairfax Addendum to the Kittimer Accords. Audio recordings of three white guys interrupting each other. Play the holocron.
I hate this episode. I'm just gonna go ahead and vomit that out there.
It's terrible.
I was about to say, you're coming in hot.
Well, I think I'm okay if this is the one where we go straight to final thoughts.
But there's so much to talk about.
There is. Oh, I want to talk about it.
Listen, Jonathan Eugene Sparks. I will use your full name.
Listen here, Derek Eugene Adams.
It's
very odd that all our middle names are Eugene, isn't it?
That's never come up before.
The show was destined to happen.
I know.
With all of our middle names being Eugene. I know that my role is to not.
Yeah, I was like, do you need to recuse yourself?
Or? Possibly. If I gave a shit about being fair to this episode, then yes. But I'm interested to see if maybe I'm the one, maybe I'm being irrational. I've never liked this episode. It's one of my least favorite Voyager episodes. It pisses me off every time I have the misfortune to watch it.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see if y'all can pull me back in some way. If y'all can point out some things that are interesting or worthwhile that will...
This will be interesting because Jonathan has a need to be contrary.
Yes.
That's true.
So he's going to look for the... And he loves Tom Paris.
I also do.
So he's going to like...
I hate this episode.
Against his better judgment, he's going to start talking about good things in this episode.
As a fellow person with a middle name of Eugene, I mean... I identify with him.
I'm very open to the idea that my hatred is at least partly irrational.
I don't think it is. There are issues. I agree.
Well, let's talk about them.
Yeah.
In the form of a podcast.
That'll never work.
They'll never listen. They'll never listen, Johnny. They'll run you right out of this town.
Well, this episode begins with some somber music. And then we have Thomas Eugene Paris.
Lieutenant Thomas Eugene Paris.
Being busted down to Ensign by an extremely wrathful Catherine Janeway.
She seems a bit up.
Catherine Janeway.
Catherine Eugene Janeway.
Catherine Eugene Janeway.
Tuvok Eugene Tuvok.
His name is Tuvok Tuvok.
I think that's been established, hasn't it?
Yeah, that sounds better.
That's why it says, okay. Yeah. No. All right. I was about to say, that's why it says Tuvok.
Well, that's it, folks. See you next week. Okay, for a better episode.
So she sends him to the brig, and I like the bit where she's like, take him to the brig, and he's like, I know the way.
Yeah, that's a classic bit.
Mm-hmm. And then he's being led down the hall, and you see his friends watching him go. B'Elanna starts to follow and almost like drops a handkerchief or something. And then they put him into the brig, and then it fades to black, which there's a lot of in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But immediately I was like, we already know the setup. He's going in there for 30 days, solitary confinement, and they march him in here, and I was like, there's no bathroom in there.
Yeah.
We can see every centimeter of this thing. There is nothing that could remotely be construed as a bathroom.
Does it pop out from the wall, maybe?
There's a button for a hollow toilet.
Or maybe if they just added like a seam.
Computer, run program, shitter, Paris, Eugene.
Like if they had run a seam maybe in the bench that he lays down very dramatically on, then maybe I could, okay, maybe that flips up and that's the toilet. But I know it's space and we're not supposed to think about toilets. But then there's sort of other weird logistical things about this sentence that... just to jump way ahead, after 30 days, he has like 2 minutes of beard growth. I'm like, huh?
Yeah. So usually when we see detention cells in any Star Trek, probably you see them the most in Deep Space Nine because you're always going to Odo's office, right?
Right.
But they show them in TNG, but they're typically used for like, okay, this is where Lieutenant Otis sleeps it off, you know, before he reports back for shift in the morning. Like they're not meant for long-term detention.
Mm-hmm.
And you assume that's because society has evolved past that. And that's been established already in Voyager in the very first episode where we see the inside of a modern, or a, I guess, modern 24th century penal colony.
Mm-hmm.
Their attitudes towards punishment have evolved beyond putting people in a 5x5 cell and letting them go insane.
I also think we were robbed of a scene of Tuvok just bringing a bucket and just dropping it off.
Yeah.
The bucket is for your feces. Ensign Paris.
See, what could have been interesting is if they had Lon Suter still be alive and he was next door
Suter's his cellmate.
Suter's in the cell next door, and
I'd watch that.
He's tunneled underneath already somehow, and then they work on escaping together.
They Shawshank out of there,
and then it becomes the Count of Monte Cristo.
Ooh, yes. Okay,
which is I love the Count of Monte Cristo in every form.
Yep.
Yeah,
doesn't matter how crappy the adaptation is.
Nope,
I'm in.
How do you feel about the Jim Caviezel movie?
I love it. I don't care.
I saw it in the theater.
Really?
Loved it. Yeah.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. I just love that property. It's one of my favorite classical properties.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think definitely like from our modern vantage point in the future, but even at the time in 98, it was well established that solitary confinement is the most inhumane of punishments that exist.
Right.
I mean, beyond just obviously direct torture.
Straight up shooting somebody, yeah, I guess.
It destroys people.
Yeah.
So it's...
It's so, okay
but,
there.
But as a cold open, I'll try to remain neutral. I'm not going to let you people suck me into this.
I'm doing it. I'm trying to project all my rage, whatever limited telepathic abilities I have.
But as a cold open, we're like, oh shit. Paris done fucked up. Obviously, this episode is going to tell me he must have done something so bad. The greatest of sins.
Something no one else on this ship would even dream
some
of doing.
Some unthinkable, novel sin that he must be punished with. And also, throughout the episode, all his visitors seem to have thinly veiled glee at his predicament.
Yeah. Running the gamut from glee to contempt.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, this isn't a big deal.
Even when the two security officers in the cold open step into the turbo lift with him, one of them just looks and just sneers like, you disgust me, guy that has saved the ship and the lives of everybody on the ship multiple times. Mm-hmm. You filth, you animal. And that's just the general tone towards him this entire episode.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
Nope.
So, come back after the credits.
Uh-huh.
And we see Tom beginning his stay in the brig. He gives, and if, as just a, if you like Tom Paris, this is a very Tom Paris episode. He gets lots of fun lines, gets lots of good bits. It's a good, like the actor's good in it. Like that's not where the flaws seem to be. So he throws a little salute to the guard and he starts doing push-ups. And I love the joke when Neelix comes in the meal, he was like one push-up, two. And then he was like,
100.
And then Neelix comes in and brings him his Leola root stew for the third time this week. And he's like, can't you replicate me a pizza? I'm a Ninja Turtle.
I mean, can he?
No.
Also, this whole like bread and water.
Basic nutrition only.
Exactly. So not only is she putting him in the hole, she's being spiteful.
This is like super... Super.
It's not just giving him a month in the brig to think about what he's done. Yeah. It's we're going to make this as miserable as possible.
Yeah.
It is psychological torture.
It's like we were on a real pirate ship or some shit back in the day. Here's your bread and water, motherfucker.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but didn't they put Lon Suter, didn't they confine Suter to quarters after he committed multiple
murders?
And gave
him like games and things to work on?
Yes.
Yeah. And like I said, so at this stage, because I don't know what he's done yet. Yeah, we haven't been told. I'm like, man, what did he do? Like, what could have earned him this punishment? And so, and Neelix is being very like, no, we're not allowed to talk to you.
Yeah.
See you next meal. And he's like, please pull up a chair and stay a while. And then Paris does say, this is cruel and unusual punishment. He's saying it in a jokey way.
But it actually is.
It actually is.
Yeah.
And you can tell he's trying to put a good face on it and be like, the inmates are getting restless. I don't know what to do. And then finally he's just sitting there grumping and he picks up a data pad. He's like, okay, begin letter. And then we get the joke of him deciding how to start the letter. Like, dear father to Admiral Paris. Hey, dad.
Yeah, it's funny.
Guess what?
It's actually a good little bit.
Yeah, it's a good bit.
Greetings, papa.
And I will say, just so I can go on the record, one of the things Jonathan and I consistently agree on is we do both like Tom Paris as a character for reasons that have been discussed. My issues with this have nothing to do with Robbie D-Mac.
No.
I think he does a very good job with the material. Yeah. He's consistently...
It's good to see him get this much screen time.
Absolutely. So when I say I hate this episode, it's not because of him, and it's not because the Paris material is good. It's everything else. It's the whole setup and how everybody reacts to him that makes zero sense.
He's like, hey, Dad, I'm in jail again. Wait, keep listening. It's not what you think. All right. He basically, okay, here's the frame. The letter is the flashback. So this is how we find out what happened.
Right.
I was doing something that you would have thought was a complete waste of time. And now we get some funny shit, Captain Proton. That shot of him as Captain Proton with the jetpack.
Like hanging from a string.
Yeah.
You can feel the joy leaping off the screen. Sure. Like he's having fun. They clearly love doing this old aesthetic type stuff. We get a really fun scene of Harry as Buster Kincaid has been captured by the twin mistresses of evil.
Demonica.
And Militia.
Militia.
Militia. And we get lots of good, and as soon as I saw the twin women, and it became clear that they're playing roles in this too, I was like, oh shit.
Oh wait, is this?
It's happening.
Is this it?
Is this the Delaney sisters? It is.
And they are hot.
But clearly they were waiting, like, we must find the hottest twin actors possible for their final revelation, because so much has been talked about them. And this is, this is probably a good place to bring up. We kind of talked about this before off mic. This episode feels like a season two episode. It's like season two Voyager, like that whole aesthetic just kept going. And out of nowhere, we have this random return of the vibe of season two.
I will say that the Delaney sisters were double-mint twins.
Oh. Oh, okay. So, you know. Yeah. That was a good way for twins to
double
get work
the flavor, double then the fun. Yeah.
Heidi and, Alyssa. Heidi and Alyssa Kramer. I think it's Kramer.
Well, I'll tell you what. You
what's
can
a little
see
two dots over an A make an A sound like?
Kramer.
It's not so much that it changes the A, it changes how you have to say the rest of the word.
Kramer.
Which is really no different functionally than Kramer. Right.
And I want to go throughout, though. Like, Yes, they're super hot, and that's a plus. But also, like, they were very good.
Very good.
Like, keep them around. These are fun characters.
And we find out that they have actual Starfleet officer-type jobs, whereas before, it kind of made it sound like they were clerical workers or something
just
like
vague
that.
Characters floating around. Okay, so anyway, they finish up the Captain Proton. When they're talking about the brain probe, he's like, bring it over here, you insolent fool! And then how Harry's, like, encouraging the other one, no, you're doing great. You're doing great. And then Captain Proton busts in, is like, I got you. And then Harry's like, oh no, Captain Proton, maybe you could come back in like 20 minutes, 30 minutes. We're just getting to the good part. And I was like, this is some powerful sub energy coming from Harry Kemp. Mainly it's because he's literally bound at that moment.
He's
like,
into it.
I'm like, okay, no shade, no kink
shade. No way.
But it's clear, okay, got it, Harry. We're dialed in on you now. So then they have to leave because they get called to the bridge, and they're talking about the Delaney sisters are talking about the star charts, and like Harry offers to help. He's like, oh, I don't want to ruin your day off, and then they're arguing about, I like Megan, not Jenny. Now correct me. Was that their names before? Like, I feel like they had different names.
Did we ever get their first names before?
I don't think we ever got their first
names. Maybe I'm just confusing it with, like, some other random date that Harry had some point in these other four seasons.
I think we've always
seasons.
Just heard them referred to as the Delaney sisters.
Yeah.
I could have swore one of them had, like, a very vaguely Irish name. Like,
you may be right. I could look back.
I don't want to believe they would mess. Like I said, probably just confusing it
is
with.
Is Megan an Irish name?
Yeah, it's sort of
Megan.
It was more like Potato Hand O'Hulahan. You know, it's kind of what my brain is telling me.
This is offensive to my people.
That seems wrong.
And we get a fun
Potato Hand. And my great great grandmother Potato Hand.
All right. We get a great bit with Harry.
We love you, like, Ireland.
They're nothing alike.
Don't unsubscribe.
I like the joke of like. They're twins, but Harry only likes one of them. He's like, they're totally different. She's that cute little dimple on her right cheek, and she's submissive and quiet and artistic, and the other one's just a huge bitch. You know, it's clear what's going on there.
Yeah.
So, meanwhile,
right?
We remember suddenly this episode is still about Paris, and he's making fun of Harry about, you've done it again. You've fallen for the unobtainable woman. He's like, you've fallen in love with the wrong twin. And Harry's like, well, at least I'm consistent. And I'm like, I miss when we just had time of you dudes just hanging out. It's been a minute. They roll up onto the bridge, a huge contrast from the last time we saw Paris with Janeway. He's like, oh, sorry to interrupt your fun, gentlemen. And they found signs of life. Like, oh, is it an M-class planet? And he's like, no, that's the interesting part. It's an ocean.
It's an ocean.
It's literally, which they, it takes them, they don't really like explain it well. Like, it's literally a planetoid that is all water. And I'm like, that's cool.
Sure.
It's bigger than the Atlantic and Pacific combined. And it's all held within a containment field. And then we get this nice shot of these, they say, are those starships or submarines just come out of the water into space?
Mm-hmm,
cool. They're powering weapons, red alert. And they do the thing where they target the lead ship and take out their weapons. And that forces them to actually talk, which the first time in a while I've seen this actually just work for them.
Yeah.
And the aliens come on the con like, I'm Deputy Council Burkus. And she's like, look, we have no interest in a fight. He's like, why are you here in my weird, like, we see them later. They're literally wearing like wetsuits.
Yeah.
With a, like a, like a drape over it. Like, they didn't work super hard on the, like, oh, they're aquatic guys.
They live under the water, so they wear scuba gear all the time.
Give them a wetsuit. I don't know. It's like, well, why are you here? Like, oh, we're explorers. We think your planet's very cool and want to learn more about it. And he's like, well, what if we don't want you? Well, we'll be disappointed, but we'll leave you alone. He's like, well, your ship's really nice. Well, come on. We'll give you a tour. And then as soon as they come on board, they're pretty much immediately nicer, and like they apologize, like forgive our vigilance, and they start talking about how long have their people lived here. Oh, they're nomadic, and we discovered this place about 300 years ago. There's a population of about 80,000, and Paris is asking questions because he's randomly very interested. This is where we definitely start to feel the first thing that's kind of shoehorned. It's like, oh no, Paris loves the ocean. God, he can't stop talking about how much he wants to be a sailor and loves boats and oceans. And,
all the time.
Oh,
all
man. The time this is well-established fact.
It's just always happened that he never talks about it when the camera's on him for the past five seasons. But right. But now,
which,
oh yeah.
As a detail about Paris, I buy that. But oh, having sure. It just all of a sudden
yeah.
Bolted onto his character.
Especially since they have already given him an interest. Right? I mean, he's always been the Americana hot rods and cheeseburgers, the Ninja Turtle, as you say. Mm-hmm, he's always been that kind of guy.
Cowabunga!
If that was just an empty space that they were now choosing to insert, he's a nautical enthusiast into, then that would be fine. Mm-hmm. But you've spent 4.5 seasons telling me, no, he's got his hobby. He's an Americana hobbyist. And then you try to add, oh, there's this other hobby that he's also always had.
Though finding out that he wanted to join effectively like Starfleet Coast Guard.
Coast Guard.
And his father's like, yeah. Fuck no, you're not joining the goddamn Coast Guard. Is hysterical. Is just a hysterical fact.
I want to be on a boat, Dad. You be on a boat.
What did he call it? It was like space boat. Like Federation Naval Patrol.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Which was like a phrase that has never existed before this moment and will never be brought up again any Star Trek property.
Canonical ephemera there that is never going to be engaged with in any way, right. Nor should it.
And so Janeway like picks up the vibe that Paris is really into this planet and these aliens. So she's like, care to join us, Mr. Paris? He's like, you seem, excited. He's like, oh, how could you tell? And they start talking. And then this is interesting stuff, actually, like where they're like, okay, so this planetoid made of just water, like how did that happen? Where did it come from? And they're like, well, we have several theories. Like some people think it's like the gods. It was a divine gift from the gods. And then, like, the second banana guy, who we spend more time with him later, he's like, oh, well, the scientists actually think it's probably maybe it formed naturally, like a gas giant or some other theories like that. And they're like, look, but we have a problem. Guess what? You found a weird place with some aliens, and there's a problem. They're losing containment that holds all this water together in space, which I don't totally know how space and gravity work.
What are you talking about?
I don't know why it needs a containment field just because it's water. Wouldn't just the mass?
There's nothing at the
any scientist now is like screaming at me, but I'm like, I don't understand why it needs.
There's nothing at the center of it. It's a big ball of water.
Or saying it, so it needs like a planet core to generate enough.
It has no, yeah.
Enough mass to have enough gravity to hold it all
right.
Okay. I can buy that. Okay. That's
and they talk about it that in the ancient times they just sucked all the water from the actual planet to make the ball.
Yeah,
right.
Which is okay. But also they never show the like desert planet that was left in its place. It's cool. Like I said, it's a weird sci-fi idea. And I'm on board with that part. Right. Like, it gets weirder and more confusing, but as a concept and an aesthetic, I kind of like it. Yeah. But anyways, they're like, okay, well, we want to go down to the core of the planet, but it's about 600 kilometers. We can't go below 100 kilometers. And then, of course, Janeway's like, well, we could take you there. And then we cut to a cozy little scene of Paris and Janeway being buds, talking about how they're going to help these aliens. She's like, I had no idea you were such an old salt. He's like, oh, it reminds me of reading Jules Verne. And I was like, wait, stop. You read a book. You didn't go onto the holodeck. You didn't watch a movie. And I'm like, it got me curious. Like, when they say I read this, are they equating
reading? I played the video game.
I mean, he could have read a data pad of the book.
Oh, yeah, he easily could have. But we don't see a lot of that, discussed. Like, it's clear in, TNG that, Picard's always reading, legitimate books or reading texts on pads and that kind of thing. And also it gets confusing later, because later when he's writing his letters to his dad, he's like, oh, Dad, remember when you would read to me Jules Verne's? I'm like, wait, did your dad read it to you? How did you get this in your brain?
Yeah, because he says, I must have read it 20,000 times. Mm-hmm. All of my friends were busy with their holoprograms. I had my head buried in Captain's Courageous, Moby Dick.
Which, Captain's Courageous sucks.
Separate podcast. Let's Patreon only.
Put it out there.
Strong feelings.
It sucks. Stay with your Robert Louis Stevenson, not your Rudyard Kiplings, would be my guidance.
Or read the Master and Commander series.
Yes, also good.
Or Horatio Hornblower.
Yes, also good. Very good. Okay, and he's like, ancient sailing ships were my first love, as we've discussed. Okay, we're learning this now. Fine. And then his dad wouldn't let him be in the Coast Guard. And he's like, well, I could take... it would take too long to retrofit Voyager to be able to go to those depths. So, but we could do the Delta Flyer in no time. And she's like, okay. And he's like, so it's my mission? She's like, bon voyage. And it's cute and fun. Fine.
Whee.
So I'm still like, okay. So clearly something with this alien race and this whole situation, he does something so bad that he is put in the brig for 30 days.
Yeah. At this point, we're the episode is still okay, because you're assuming, wow, he must murder one of these scuba men and sleep with his scuba wife, and that's what he did that was so bad to deserve this punishment.
Yeah,
I was trying to think of
it retroactively falls apart once you see what he actually did.
Because I was trying to think of other Star Trek episodes where it was a very serious situation, like that time that Riker got accused of murder.
Yeah,
like I was like, it's got to be that level of someone's dead, it's his fault. Or something.
Which I think is what he was accused of, right? Was murdering the guy and sleeping with his wife.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
The sort of Rashomon Light episode of TNG, whatever its actual name is. Okay, so then we get another cute-ass scene of him telling Harry, you're going to be my first mate. And he's like, hey, but we need to focus on the mission. But shouldn't there be a little fun involved? And then he runs up to Seven. He's like, Bosun, ready to shove off? She's like, what? He's like, call me Skipper. And they're like, it's boat talk. It's cute. And then Riga shows up. And
you'll get used to it. I think not.
I think not.
I will not play your stupid game.
Then Riga, the scholar of this alien race, shows up. I love all his weird science instruments. They're fun.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, you like to travel light? And he's like, oh, we don't. And Seven's like, we need none of that crap. We have a full sensor array.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay. And then, but Tom's like, oh, we'll store your gear in the hold. And I was like, oh, I wonder if there's going to be a moment where they need to use his weird gear. No, just a one-off joke.
Of course not.
And then down the flyer goes to the surface of the water planet, anchors away. I will say, once the shots we see of the underwater city and the giant oxygen refineries. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Reminded me a good bit of The Phantom Menace.
Mm. Oh, wow.
And when they go through the planet core.
Well, let's see. This was 1998.
Which also was John Rhys Davies. Another connection.
To Voyager.
Interesting.
This was made in 98, so wasn't Phantom Menace 98, 99?
I don't
know. No, it was after that.
It was 2000.
It was 2000 something.
I thought I was in high school when it came out.
The Phantom Menace. 99.
Yeah.
So they could have gotten this idea from Voyager.
Yet another thing out there ripping off Voyager.
Yep.
Add it to the friggin' list.
Okay, so they pass by the oxygen refinery as quickly as they pass by that concept in the script. Because later in, when they're like, oh, we need to, it's your mining that's destroying the thing at the center of the planet. I was like, what mining? It took me a couple scenes. Like, oh, they're talking about the oxygen refineries. How's that mining? How? Okay, anyway, we'll save that for when we get there. We get a couple lines from Seven, like an efficient design. That means she's impressed. And then they say, we're proud of what we built here. And they're like, I can see why. And then I was like, okay, I got it. I figured it out. Paris is going to do a thing that destroys the planet, and this whole race has to leave and just start over somewhere else. That's it. That makes sense.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
He literally, and like, they're probably like maybe half the population gets killed, because they established there's only 80,000 people.
Yeah.
So he could accidentally kill 1,000, and that's a significant part of their civilization. I'm like, I got it. I know what's going to happen, but not what happens.
Absolutely no.
Okay. Cut back real quick to Janeway in her office, and they're like, they're giving some disturbing news to Council, whatever the fuck his name was. Burgess. Look, we ran a simulation, and at the rate of dissipation, you have less than 5 years. You're probably going to have to consider evacuating. And then he's like, oh, what'll I tell the 47 sovereigns? And I'm like, that's just a funny line. I should say that anytime I don't want to do something. What'll I tell the 47 sovereigns?
Pause the game and move the clothes over to the dryer. But what do I tell the 47 sovereigns?
Exactly. And he's like,
valid question.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm saying that was a valid question.
Oh, yeah.
It is, always.
And there's kind of establishing that he's sort of the like mid-level bureaucrat that doesn't want to get in trouble and doesn't want to put his neck out. And he's like, okay, well, I will tell them, but let's wait until the Delta Flyer comes back and find out. Maybe they'll find a solution.
I always love that Star Trek, which is a show about a bureaucracy that was created on Earth and has been stretched out over most of an entire quadrant of the galaxy, also tends to hate bureaucrats.
Yeah.
Like the Federation is a massive bureaucracy and which is celebrated as this utopian ideal for like humanoid development. And yet every time there is a character who is an established bureaucrat on the show, they're the asshole.
Yep. That's true. Which they should love when they meet a society that has a fuck ton of laws.
Right.
Oh, perfect. Really, if you think about it, Starfleet should have like a whole section of space lawyers.
Yeah.
That their specialty is like waltzing in and figuring out all the local customs and laws and how they can operate within this legals.
Well, it's sort of reflective of how Americans view bureaucrats. I mean, we love to flex the tremendous power of our federal government, which is only exists and is driven because of bureaucrats. But at an individual level, people hate bureaucrats. It's used as a
pencil pushers.
Yeah.
Okay, so beneath the surface of the Grand Ocean, do they ever name the planet? They just keep calling it the ocean.
I think it's just the ocean,
which
right?
is fine.
Yeah,
it probably sounds better in the race's native tongue. The hull's buckling because they're getting too deep. They find a structure at this depth, and they turn on the forward illumination, and it's some kind of field reactor. Obviously, this is the thing creating the containment field. Got it. Mm-hmm. It's malfunctioning. It's over 100,000 years old. And then they start like, it was made by the previous inhabitants. It seems to have some sort of old computer. What? And then they're like, well, what was it? And then they get attacked by a big creature.
Big electric whale.
And the shields get fried, like, get us out of here. And then Riga yells out, you can't kill it. Which I was like, why not? I think the idea is that maybe they think this is like they are super eco-friendly to all of the creatures of the ocean, but they didn't really establish that super strongly.
They say something later when Burkus, the bureaucrat, is saying...
Dressing Tom down.
He says, for 1,000 years, we are, you know, 10 generations, we have protected the wildlife, maintained the delicate ecological balance. But then all of a sudden they're like, fuck the ecological balance. And that's what prods Tom into action in the first place.
Other than sucking oxygen out of the ocean.
Other than mining it to the point that it becomes so unstable that it's collapsing.
Yeah.
We have loved on it ever so gently.
Look, man, some real smart aliens made this fishbowl in space.
Respect it. Respect the space fish ball.
Anyway, so they zap the electric eel whale, and it only made it matter, but then it goes away, and then they have a breach, and then they're all scrambling around trying to fix it.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And then we cut back to the letter to reestablish that we've just come back from a commercial, so I need to remind the audience that this is a framing device for what you're about to see.
Right.
Red alert, all hands to battle stations. And Tom's like, me? What about me? If we're in trouble, we need our best pilot. And I'm like, woof. This, like I said, season two, Tom, all of a sudden. I do love this bit with the doctor, even though this is tying into the whole, like, everyone's super shitty to Tom in this situation. But as the doctor, it is definitely within the bounds of his character. And just to be like, well, there was Voyager's fine. There are five ships. They just opened fire without warning. Ensign Culhane confused the enemy with a brilliant series of maneuvers. And he's like, Ensign Culhane can't brilliantly suck my dick. You know, like, that's basically what he said.
Ensign Culhane couldn't fly a ship up my ass.
And they give the doctor a good line of like, he's like, oh, that's it? It's like, you have what Naomi Wildman referred to as a boo-boo. And then he's like, please.
Sick burn.
Take me to sick bay. Please get me out of here. Anything to stave off madness. And he's like, I'll see you in 20 days.
Wouldn't the doctor be a little more progressive in his thoughts towards the psychological impacts of...
I don't know. Would he? Well, I mean, considering how like they reacted to Torres...
Yeah, but it's also been established that he has the entire psychological diagnostic manual saved in his matrix. So, I mean, his bedside manner sucks, but it seems like, I don't know. Plus, he doesn't hate Tom. Like, they clown on each other, but they have worked together very closely. Again, this is what we referenced earlier. This is the first sort of instance of what we referenced earlier about the gamut of reaction to Tom's confinement running from glee to contempt. Mm-hmm. Like, the crew hates him now for whatever he did.
Like I said, season two, Tom. If this had happened second episode of season two, where, like, we've only been together a year, you're still in that, like, roguish, can we trust you, should we trust you?
You're kind of pissing everybody off.
You piss everybody off all the time.
You're cocky, all that stuff.
This would have made more sense. But 5 years in, it's like, you, this is your family. This is your tribe flying through the stars. Like, okay, Dad, where were we? Back on the Delta Flyer, underneath the surface of the ocean, he's repaired the breach, nothing like a cold shower, and they're like, okay, well, we can dump some crap out the back of the Delta Flyer, and we'll eventually rise to the surface, but Tom's like, no, I think we should stay. Harry's like, you're taking this Captain's Courageous thing a little too far. He's like, nah, just put me in an environmental suit, and I'll get out and do a thing. It's like, it's not clear what he wants to even do. I just gotta be here.
Go poke buttons on this ancient piece of technology that nobody understands.
It's fine. Everything's fine.
Which, again, his borderline psychotic obsession with the ocean and everything under it, it's a little late in the game to be establishing that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is actually one of my more minor problems with this episode.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Fair.
If I liked other things about the episode, I would hand wave that and be like, it just never came up when the cameras were on him. But
right.
We've never been on a planet that had an ocean.
So, like, I will sacrifice my life and my career and my friendships to save an ocean. Any ocean. Doesn't have to be an ocean that I know about. Any ocean I find. Poseidon aid me. I am the guardian of the oceans.
Come, Earth Thunderer. Drink with your acolyte. Okay. But anyway, they're like, no, we're not leaving you down here, you fucking weirdo. And meanwhile, back on Voyager, they see that the containment field is weakening. They're venting a lot of water. They're trying to figure out how to seal it. They hail the flyer again, but they get no answer. Like, well, maybe they're too deep to receive the transmission, or maybe they had an accident. And Burkus is like, well, what am I going to tell the Council of the 47 Sovereigns? And he's like, are you more worried about your political career than the blah, blah, blah? It's just saber rattling. It's not really important. Meanwhile, at the bottom of the I keep saying the bottom of the ocean, but it's just the middle of the ocean.
In the ocean.
Within the ocean. They're like, okay, so they figure out the reactor is old and it's slowly getting crushed. And so that's why the containment field is dying, because it's diverting energy to keep itself working, which makes sense because if the whole thing gets crushed, then there's no containment period. Mm-hmm, like, okay, well, can we like divert some energy to it to help it out? And they're like, okay, yeah, that'll stabilize the core, but it's only going to be a temporary solution. Well, it's better than nothing. Meanwhile, on Voyager, they're like, holy shit, it's stabilized from within. And then they see that there's an object on slow ascent, the Delta Flyer. Great, great, great. So once they all get back up, they're like, okay, you're not going to believe this. This when they talk about the ocean used to be part of a landmass, and there's this like precursor race that like took all the water off the planet and put them in a ball. And they're like,
we don't know why.
Yeah, they're exactly. Like, why did they do that?
They just
that?
Didn't
like,
want that chocolate in their peanut butter. They're
maybe
like,
for funsies. We don't know.
Just to see if they could. Maybe that's why they all died. Maybe that's why they're not here.
And this is when they realize, Riga, your mining operations are destroying the ocean. Which I was like, mining operations? Like, I think they should have just said, your oxygen refineries. That's what you've called them. In my mind, that is not mining, even though literally it is mining. But
it's extraction.
Extraction.
But, yeah.
Right.
Then we cut to Baby Tom Paris.
Baby Tom
Go to your room.
This part's so weird.
It's extremely jarring.
And it's just,
but Papa, I want to play with my boat.
And unnecessary.
And it also, it definitely establishes, oh, okay, so Janeway is a parental figure for him.
Oh, yes.
Which I guess we've kind of known that, but then there's also always been a little bit of like a flirtatiousness between the two of them. Mm. Because at one point she's literally talking over the voice of his dad, being like, Thomas Eugene Paris, I reduce you in rank. Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't know. It's a psychological angle that I didn't need.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. I've always kind of enjoyed the dynamic between Paris and Janeway, and now it feels unhealthy.
Yes, this whole episode, if does nothing else, recontextualizes his relationships with everyone on the ship to show that they are toxic. Except for Harry. I think he and Harry leave unscathed.
And Harry's kind of an asshole to him when he comes to visit.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, which is Harry. About to happen. Yeah. So we get the bit where he's like, you look like hell. How'd you get in there? How'd you get past the guard? Vulcan neck pinch. Haha, that's funny. So apparently, he's been petitioning the captain for permission to visit. And here, like, halfway through, she finally said, fine, you can see him for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. But also is like, and then when he says, like, well, how's B'Elanna? She misses you. I guess she hasn't been petitioning nobody to come down and see me.
Where is B'Elanna? I kept waiting for one line for them to explain, like, hey, especially because later B'Elanna's like, you should fucking do it.
Do it.
You should just go crazy, man. Go totally Maquis on this
go
whole plan.
Go shit.
Yeah.
I wanted there to be one line where it's like, hey, I told B'Elanna, stay away. I don't want you to get implicated in this.
Right.
And you can sort of, I mean, if you want to make a jump on behalf of this episode, which I don't, you can and say that maybe they had that conversation, but it's never actually said.
No, I think she would. There should definitely have been a scene where she's like pissed off and like, you know,
hey, Captain,
you like, told like, me to do it, B'Elanna,
or that. Yeah,
well, I didn't mean
not like that.
Or B'Elanna.
No, B'Elanna going to like B'Elanna going to Janeway and losing her shit.
You don't get the impression that anyone has gone to bat for him, no, other than exactly. After 2 weeks
because what best, he did.
His best friend Harry evil. Being like, "Can I go see him for like 5 minutes?"
Yeah,
I feel like Chakotay would have a real problem with throwing somebody in the hole for 30 days.
Yeah,
there's just so much of that. It's just completely just. Everybody's on board with this, which again makes you think that whatever he did must be so god awful terrible that everybody on the ship needs a month to stop being mad at him.
Yeah.
But at this point, I'm still on the train of like, okay, they've realized the ocean refineries are destroying the containment. So he's going to do something that fucks up the oxygen refineries.
He was baking a pizza in the oxygen refinery.
Whoops!
Whoa.
Okay, so anyway, he finished up the little conversation with Harry about, like, what have you been doing to pass the time? Thinking, trying not to think, recording a letter to my father, and, like, kind of explaining how I ended up in here. It's kind of a framing device, Harry. I'm going to explain to you that this is how this works.
See, what it does is it allows me to be sort of an unreliable narrator of past events.
Without it feeling too forced.
Without it seeming like I'm just talking to my reflection in the mirror.
Right.
And then so apparently in the past few days, Paris has stopped working on it. He's like, I'll never finish it. He He's like, well, no, you should. Maybe he'll hear it someday. Or it'll feel better just to get it off your chest. And then he's like, thanks for the visit, Harry. Get the fuck out. And Harry's like, see you in 14. Your father said you never finish anything.
Oh, by the way, best friend, you're a disappointment to your father. And eat shit, Harry.
Yeah, yeah.
You want to talk about being a disappointment to your parents? At least I was a lieutenant at one point.
Oh! Resume recording. So, okay. So we told Council Burkus that the oxygen refineries are destroying it, and we've given you the shield schematics for the Delta Flyer. It won't solve your problem. So you can set up your own ships to be able to go down to the core if you need to. It won't solve your problems, but it's a start. But we definitely think you should shut down the refineries 4, 5, and 6. Not all of them, just 4, 5, and 6 to kind of take the load off of this until you can figure it out. And he's like, we'll take it under advisement.
Like talking about the environment with Republicans.
A little bit.
A little bit.
A little bit. We'll take it under advisement. And then this is the thing when Tom interrupts, like, who's going to read that report? Like, and they're like, Tom, I don't think he understands the magnitude of the crisis. What you're suggesting could take months. And then they get this quick little insert shot of Tom's yelling, and you see Janeway's face just for a moment. Where you can see her loading the gun in her mind.
Yep.
Like, oh, nope, you tore it. And this is when we get the Burkus saying, who are you to tell us what to do with our ocean? And he's like, it's not your ocean. And then Janeway's like, Lieutenant. And then they start, then as we get into the whole scene about like, we have a phrase, brine in your veins, a special connection to the waters. We've been here forever. We've took care of all the manatee and shit. Have you done the same?
No, I'm not from here. Shut
you
up.
You know good and damn well that I haven't.
Why would you even bring it up? This is just dumb.
Good.
It's not a productive line of questioning.
Good day, Captain. And he stomps off. And Tom's still yelling, we can't just let this go. Like, Tom, the prime directive, the almighty prime directive, which is a fair criticism.
Fair.
Oh, yeah, the criticism. Prime directive that we care about. And then, but then when Janeway says, excuse us, Torres, I was like, oh, shit, it's about to get real. Oh, shit.
She goes, see you later.
See you later. Glad I'm not in trouble.
Let me know how it goes. And then
they make out.
I can believe that.
I mean, Tom is telling the story.
I know you're upset, but when you're in a room with me, you check that attitude at the door. Understood?
Again, a standard she only applies to Tom, because in the past 5 or 6 episodes, how many people have we seen just straight up yell at Janeway in the middle of the bridge?
Neelix.
Neelix, yeah, included, yeah. You know, where she was just like, well, I understand. I'm going to put up with this for some reason.
That wasn't in front of company, though. Was it?
That is the difference.
I guess that is the difference.
Don't you do this shit in front of fucking aliens.
Yeah.
I will lose my mind.
But no, you're right. I mean, everyone loses their shit at Janeway at some point.
Yeah. And just conveniently, though, for the purposes of this episode, now it really bothers her.
Yeah.
Just like now she gives a shit about the Prime Directive.
Mm-hmm.
That this whole conflict, this storyline itself would have made more sense on TNG. Because at least Picard, with 2 to 3 notable exceptions, did try to adhere to the Prime Directive.
Yeah.
For Janeway, that is literally just words that she says from time to time. It never reflects in her actions.
Mm-hmm. No.
Tom says, but you agree with me. It's like, look, we gave them help. We told them what we know. It's like, but they're not going to use it. Maybe not, but that's their prerogative. And he's like, but end of discussion. We're going to resume course to the Alpha Quadrant. Is that clear? As a bell. And then they both sort of storm off. He storms off and Janeway's there. And there's just like a lingering shot of the office chairs. And I'm like, those are just office chairs. They tried to make look spacey. I've never really noticed or paid attention to them before, but I'm like, yeah, they bought those at like Target.
Yeah.
And just grafted some extra pads on them. Because it's mainly the feet that are like, those are just regular old office chairs.
Chairs of the future.
Now we go to sad Captain Proton. B'Elanna comes in and she's like, hey. And he's like, hey, are we even still dating? Who knows? Who can know? Are you here to stamp out intergalactic evil? He's like, you know, it's funny. Like, I know this is just seems like a childhood fantasy, but this place really started to matter to me in the day we've been here. Sounds pretty stupid, huh? And she's like, yeah, it does. In a perfect world. Right. But she's like, no, you found yourself a cause. I'm proud of you. But Captain Proton's not going to be able to save the day. What about Tom Paris? Which is the worst advice she could possibly have given in this moment.
She is as responsible for what happens next as Tom is.
Yeah.
At this point, because she knows him well enough to know that if you say that to Tom Paris, you have now locked the cruise missile on target.
You don't enable Tom Paris because he's going to do it.
Yeah.
She listened to the wrong side of herself. She listened to that Maquis side.
That's the Maquis side.
It's like, no. You should have said that Starfleet thing.
Which, again, her role in this and how her past as a Maquis, you know, especially since we're coming off Nothing Human, where maybe her Maquis side had a chance to boil back to the surface a little bit. If that was something that they had incorporated or explored in some way with this episode, that might have been cool, but they don't. No. This is the last time we see B'Elanna this episode, and there's never really any fallout at all.
Weird.
Yeah.
It's very weird. Her absence from this tale is very weird.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the kernel of the idea of like, okay, Tom is the person that's always making jokes, always flippant. Like he's like wants to pretend like he doesn't care about things. But I'm like, yeah, but that was season two. It is abundantly clear how dedicated he is and how much he cares about his crew and how much he cares about things.
It's a deliberate evolution in his character.
Yeah.
It was a deliberate arc from like season one and two Tom to season three and four Tom.
Yeah.
There were events, there were opportunities and moments that provoked those changes in his character. And now they just slap the whole thing into full reverse. And by the end of the episode, he's like, hey, I don't give a shit if you demote me. I'm the guy who does. I'm chaotic good. I do what I think is right. And your authoritarian constructs don't affect me one bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I feel like the Tom stuff was just an afterthought. In some ways. Like, they're like, we need some way to frame this. Okay, let's make Tom do it and we'll demote him because that'll be interesting. But really, we care about this water planet or something.
Do they?
Like, but even that, I'm like...
It almost feels with this episode like...
Like there's no balance. Nothing seems...
Like they were sitting around and somebody mentioned, you know what I've never seen anywhere in Star Trek? I've never seen a main character get demoted for fucking up. And they were like, let's do that. So they started with the moment of Tom getting busted down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then worked backwards.
Right.
Which is a shit way to write a story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that's not what happened, but it feels that way. It feels like they just wanted that moment. They wanted to be the first Star Trek.
I think they were like, hey, what'll make Josh Darnell real fucking mad in 20
years? Well,
you
know what? They succeeded.
Well,
good on them. They nailed it.
Here's how it really started.
Uh-oh.
Some dude had an idea of doing an ocean in space. Scott Miller.
Yeah.
And so they wrote the episode. It was 10 minutes too short.
Oh, my God.
And then that is when they added in Tom Paris being demoted and being the whole frame of the whole story.
Writing to length. Yep. Writing to length. Terrible in screenplays and term papers.
Well, the screenplay is now 43 pages long, and that means it's done.
It means it's good.
Robbie McNeil is the one that suggested it.
Really?
Well, not necessarily this, but he suggested that to bring back some sort of edge to Paris a little bit. And this is what they came up with.
Don't listen to actors about their characters.
Yeah.
Be like, oh, that's a really cool idea. And then push them out of the
room. We'll take that under consideration. Hit them with the bureaucrat line.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now Tom has, like you said, the cruise missile has been fired. It's locked on. So Riga's beaming off. Tom comes in a totally non-suspicious way is like, hey, you're dismissed, crewman. I'll handle this. They're like, I feel like I should immediately report this to someone, but...
Smoke if you got him, crewman. Break time.
Yeah, it ranks him. It's fine.
And then he's like, okay, look, Riga, what do you think's going to happen now? He's like, they're only going to make really small token changes. So they're not going to be taking the oxygen refineries offline. He's like, all right, so hypothetically, if someone shut down the refineries, well, then they would have to rebuild them, and then they could redesign them to the specs we gave them that won't be as damaging to the planet. And this totally wrong-footed me. Like, because they kept saying, shut down. And then when they got down there, they're like, oh, we meant blow the fuck up.
Yes.
We meant destroy.
Yeah.
And so, which is a way of shutting something down.
That is
down,
one way to shut them down. Yeah.
Sort of a permanent shut down. Yeah.
I was like, confusing. And Rico's like, what are you suggesting? Is like, I'm just asking questions. Look, we're not supposed to get involved, but unless I have a direct request, I'm like, you're making all this up. Like, direct request doesn't have shit to do with anything.
And that holds up like a wet napkin later. That's you can tell that's the kind of thing he's been amping himself up, and he told himself, wait, it's kind of like the whole thing with, like, you have to tell me if you're a cop. If you don't tell me you're a cop, right, then you can't arrest me.
No, that's like his personal code is like, if you ask me for help, I'll help you. I have to ask. But you have to ask.
But also then Riga's like, if you can get me down there, I'd be willing to do it. But it turns out the plan is just fly down there in the Delta Flyer and blow it up, which does not require Riga's presence at all.
No. Nope.
So I was like, so they're going to go down there and like turn them off, and that'll show that they'll see such an immediate improvement to something. But then it's just, no, we're just going to blow it all up. I'm like, what?
Yeah, we'll shut them down, and they'll see that the containment field stabilizes in a meaningful way. And maybe that's where they were going with this, but then they needed to have this sort of the standoff moment in the end where you think Janeway is going to shoot him, but then she actually shoots the missile that he shoots. And so maybe that's why they did it, to set up, to create false tension there.
I guess. But it's false tension in that it literally makes no sense that there's no tension.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you'll get no argument out of me.
Captain, there's been an unauthorized launch. Whee! Tom, let's get him.
Kill him. Well, so couldn't we just try to... No, I said kill him. That's an order. Hail him.
No response. Tractor beam out of range.
I hate him now, even though I've always loved him and treated him almost like a son or at least a protege of some kind. Now I hate him for no reason.
Also, the fact that the depth charge photon torpedo hit their torpedo, but at no point did you set up that you were aiming for that.
Exactly. And what also not how depth charges work.
Yeah.
So if you can figure something to be a depth charge, you couldn't target something specifically with it.
No, that's not how it works. You just drop it in and it explodes in the general area of a
thing. You guys really hate this.
At a prescribed depth.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
But it didn't do that. It just hit the...
Right. It just zipped like a little interceptor and knocked out their missile.
We get a quick bit of Council Burkus yelling and her being like, Mr. Paris acted without authorization. He's a radical act. Well, you better take some sort of radical action to protect the ocean. And then we see the underwater firing. They're being fired on by other ships underwater. Hull pressure is approaching critical, which he's like, we're going too fast. What's the only way to outrun them? And I was like, well... Okay, they're not as deep as they were before. I don't feel like that'd be a concern. But anyway, whatever. And then, she finally gets Tom on the cons, like, you need to stop. I can't do that. You're disobeying a direct order. And then they figure out the depth charge, which we just said wouldn't work. But she's like, photon torpedo, do it. Okay, so Harry's trying real hard on the bridge to be like, Mom, this is my bro.
We aren't really going to shoot my bro, Mom.
This is Tom we're talking about. He forfeited his status the moment he crossed me.
What an incredibly...
All of you take a lesson from this!
An incredibly non-Starfleet thing to say.
Yeah.
That's what I hate about this. One of the things I hate about this episode is how it's like everybody forgot their Starfleet. I swear, if you told me at the end of this episode, and it turns out we've been in the Terran universe the entire time... This was all Mirror Universe stuff. Right. I believe it because of how everybody's happy, how they're all, their attitudes towards punishment and incarceration, and how they just have nothing but contempt for people that should be their friends.
What's that episode in TNG where Picard's off the ship and the other guy takes over for a while and everybody hates him?
Oh, yeah. Oh. What's his name?
Captain Jellicoe.
Yeah. Jellicoe. Like, she's like that type of character in this episode.
You know that Jellicoe has a stan community out there, a small but vocal stan community that are like, no, # Jellicoe was right. Jellicoe was a great captain, and he was right all along. And I wonder what happened to you in your life that you look at Jellicoe and think, now that's a respectable authority figure.
I don't agree with everything he did, but
I think it's borne out pretty strongly.
But he's pretty much the bad guy,
yeah,
in a lot of ways. But
is Jonathan a Jellicoe stan?
No.
More importantly, are you a Jellicoe cat?
Jellicoe cat. Jellicle fans are Jellicle fans. Jellicle fans are
Jellicle. Oh, God. Just keep talking.
Anyway, so they have this silly standoff where they're like, fire the torpedo. I'm firing my torpedo. We're firing torpedoes. We're both firing torpedoes.
Countdown.
Stand down, fire. Mr. Paris. I won't stand down.
I will not stand down.
Did you call the code red? You know, all that type of shit. And then she's like, fire. But it turns out she was firing at his missile, not at him.
All along. And didn't tell the other bridge officers that, though. She wanted to manufacture drama for them as well.
Right.
Okay. Just everybody else on that bridge thought they were killing Tom Paris. Yes, she's like, just kidding.
Just kidding.
Let this be a lesson to you all.
I secretly told Tuvok via telepathy.
Tuvok, Eugene, Tuvok, target the missile only.
Captain's log.
Don't really kill my sweet boy, Tom, Eugene, Paris.
We salvaged the Delta Flyer, but now I must turn my attention to a matter of discipline. And we're kind of right back at the beginning of the episode, but we get a few lines before that moment. Do you have anything to say? I would have destroyed your shuttle if necessary. Permission to speak freely or whatever. She's like, she gives him like the 1 centimeter nod. They weren't going to listen. I was the only one that could help. Passion alone doesn't give you the right.
Bullshit. Bullshit.
And we've already talked about this earlier. Like, the evidence of that being super bullshit is the next episode after this.
And so many episodes before this one as well. But you're right. They waited a whole week before they gave Janeway a line that directly contradicted. Now, granted, she was trying to get laid. When she said it in the next episode, not 100% accountable for things that you say when you're trying to get laid. But her whole, like, and one of the reasons we love her, right? I mean, one of the reasons we've argued that she is the right captain for this mission and this situation is that she not only will color outside the lines, she secretly craves coloring outside the lines. Mm-hmm. She wants that opportunity to do that.
Yeah, I guess there's a distinction to be made. It's like when Janeway decides to do that, she's the captain. Her will is law. And he went against a direct disorder and she can't handle a lack of discipline. And I get all that stuff. But it's just dumb.
Yeah, and I follow you there that like it's different when the captain does it than when a lieutenant does it. But she has tolerated it from other subordinates who she likes more. She's tolerated it from Tuvok.
Oh, she's encouraged it.
I mean, Tuvok has gone way outside the lines, and she's always like, Tuvok, no.
I'm very disappointed at you. See you at brunch tomorrow.
How dare you give away those memories?
Chakotay's done it, and they just exchange longing looks at one another to the delight of all Janeways out there, you know. This is the only time that it's like she saved up all the punishment she should have given them and put it in one big ball and dumped it on top of Tom for trying to save an entire ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
Until now, you've been a fine officer. Thought you were past this kind of conduct.
Planet saving.
You thought wrong.
At least I broke the rules for a reason. Something I believed in. She's like, I admire your principles. Take Ensign Paris to the brig.
I know the way.
Okay, so we go to the Tuvok, where he's like, rise and shine, Ensign. Your 30 days have been served. You may want to shave first. And as we noticed, I was like, is there facial hair there?
No.
Like,
he's just dirty.
He's
got some dirt on
it. Because there's no shower in that cell.
Yeah, it's just dirty.
I assume there's a big pile of his own shit over in the corner.
We go to the final scene. He gets out. We go to the final scene. This is probably the most cowardly thing. Like, obviously, the fact she didn't visit him in jail for 30 days should be a huge bone of contention for their relationship. But instead, she just calls him and says, hey, coming over for dinner, right? Yeah, okay. And I'm like, you don't mind eating with an ex-con? That's an order, Ensign.
It's sexy because now it's sexual harassment. Now it's workplace sexual harassment because she outranks him.
And yes,
it's now
ma'am.
An inappropriate relationship.
And it's very clear from the whole vibe of this last scene, like, he's going to go right back to work like nothing happened.
Like, nothing happened.
They're never going to bring this up. It's never going to be anything.
He hasn't been building up animosity towards the people who did this to him for the past month. Nope. Just going to, he'll be back in there tomorrow. Yes, ma'am, on the bridge.
It's basically, Tassily seems to say he believes that his punishment was fair.
Yeah.
Right? Which is kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
So he's like, okay, resume recording. Well, I'm out now, Dad. I don't know if I'll ever understand you or what went wrong between us. But maybe this will help you understand me a little better. He's like, file the letter, transmit when we're within range of Earth, which is supposed to be like this powerful, like sad, like one day, you know, maybe after he's died, like in 70 years, they'll finally get there and it'll get transmitted to his dad, who will also be dead. Like,
they'll put it in the Voyager Museum and future generations will know that he tried to patch things up with his dad. I mean, yeah, I don't know.
So, final thoughts, which I don't think we may not need final thoughts today.
I've aired a lot already, to be perfectly
honest. Yeah, this episode has problems for all the all the problems we basically said so far. It's got a couple of good moments, but by and large, it's just odd. It's like
it feels out of sequence.
It's kind of a bizarro world. Sort of version of right. Everything.
Well, Josh, you said it before we, like, it feels like a season 2 script that someone found behind a desk.
Like, oh shit, we never actually sent this one to production.
We could just use this, just and update a couple
things. And we don't have to write anything new this week.
Right. Which, right. We know that's not real, but that's what it feels like. It feels out of sequence. I will say that, like, when I watched it in preparation for this, like, I basically enjoyed it. Like, yeah. I was like, oh, I like Tom Paris. But I was just like, I was watching it. I was drinking my coffee, was having a little snack. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. But like I wasn't prepared for the bile that you two would bring. But I think there's no reason. Like, I'm not leaping to this episode's defense by any measure. I would love the situation where you both hate an episode and think it's terrible, and I'm like, but there's a baby that does a dance, so it's good, you know, like,
and that is the only thing that could have saved this episode.
A dancing,
the baby. The little Ally McBeal.
I mean, CGI the Captain baby. Proton sequence
was good.
Was like that extracted from the rest of this. A+, thumbs up. Love that shit.
It gave us the Delaney sisters, and that is the only reason that I don't advocate for this episode to be completely stricken from canon. The way that I do the other episode that will not be named from what last season? Is that season 4?
Oh, yeah.
But it just, you know, I really like Tom Paris. And the reason that I like that character is because I love the idea. I love that Voyager gave us B-team Starfleet officers. Frankly, it gets a little bit tiresome in TNG and in Deep Space Nine, that every single officer was the top of their class and has 5 PhDs and knows right. how to do every job on the ship and never sleeps. And they're all William Riker, who's excellent at everything. I always like, one of the things I like about Voyager is you just got Tom. He's just like, he's a very middle of the road Starfleet officer on his best day. Mm-hmm. And that's fine because most of Starfleet would have to be made up of middle of the road Starfleet officers. Mm-hmm. Most writers just don't think we're interested in them. So the fact that you get like a whole sort of day in the life of Tom Paris is cool. My issues are with how the writers had everybody else reacting to him in a way that is just completely out of the narrative sequence that we've been exposed to for the past 3 seasons. Why do they all hate him all of a sudden when he did a thing that is at the most marginally worse than stuff that Chakotay and Tuvok and Lord knows Janeway have done themselves multiple times throughout the run of the show with zero consequences other than a stern talking to. So it just doesn't, there's just no consistency to this in terms of its place within the larger narrative.
Well, I think this episode establishes more than anything else that more important than the prime directive to Janeway is do not embarrass her in front of a dude in a wetsuit.
That's her prime directive.
She will go ham.
You spend the next month in solitary confinement. A month!
Yeah. I think we're all pretty much on the same page. Like, the experience of watching it was fine, but as soon as we kind of applied any critical lens, it just falls the fuck apart. So, yep, it's a bad one.
It's a bad one. I liked it.
You son of a bitch.
Shatters bottle against edge of bar.
Say it again. Say it.
The good citizens of the jury have reviewed the evidence. Gentlemen, your closing arguments.
Thank you, Your Honor. 30 days is garbage.
I'd say more, but my closing argument is currently being tied up by some additional and pointless Q continuum bureaucracy that I'm being told can't be avoided at this time. Thanks.
Captain Spurlock.
A gripping story of a man who must weather the harsh consequences of his actions in an unforgiving system that fails to understand his noble motives. That's a thing that probably exists somewhere, but it doesn't exist here. Not this week. And that's why I'll be pleading no contest on behalf of this episode, and I ask that my client be sentenced to, you guessed it, 30 days of watching 30 days at least once per day. Thank you.
Ultimately, the fate of this voyage is up to you good beings on the jury, but it is my august responsibility to make judgment based on the evidence and argument placed before the court today. After reviewing it all, I hereby decree that case 509, 30 days, is garbage. These verdicts cannot be appealed. They are final and irrevocable within this quadrant, space-time continuum, and county. Court adjourned.
The People vs. Star Trek Voyager is recorded in front of no one. Space Judge Midnightian Later is played by Derek Adams. The Prosecution, John Q. Continuum Esquire, is played by Jonathan Sparks. The Defense, Matthias Zap Spurlock, is played by Josh Tarnell. All episodes of Star Trek Voyager are presumed good until proven garbage.
Shadow Public Radio presentation. For more excruciating action, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you seek podcast content.